Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. Go there, click on the donate button, keep free speech alive. Also go to nationalbugle.com, download the Kosher-tified app, make 2020 year one of your new non-kosher certified lifestyle. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's great to be here. Great start to the week. And really looking forward to discussing some of the latest news topics with you.
And there sure is a lot of latest news to discuss. I know that last week we and others pretty much talked it to death, the whole assassination of General Soleimani and all of the fallout from that. Just maybe to kind of put it to rest for a little while, there have been a couple of interesting things that have happened over the past few days. One was the admission by Iran that they had shot down the plane inadvertently. It was like their own anti-aircraft batteries that mistook the plane for maybe a bomber that was going to come and attack them. They shot it down. And then also there are reports, and I don't know if you've seen them, but there are reports that have come out that that Trump was going to escalate. He saw a Tucker Carlson show and decided not to escalate, and that he's also admitted to people around him, according to, I think, a Wall Street Journal report, that he did this because he is worried about the Republican senators abandoning him in the impeachment trial. So I threw out those few things. Do you have any particular comments about one of those issues?
All I'll say is it's very interesting to see what's happened with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a man who, in some respects, is a very smooth operator. In others, not so. And politically, as a campaigner, he was a very smooth operator. And I've said that a lot of times before, many, many times, in fact. But I think the one thing we can learn from all of these recent goings on is Donald Trump came to power largely by opposing Jewish interests in America. He opposed mass immigration. Mm-hmm. He opposed the media. Mm-hmm. He opposed the press. And he talked about demographic change. Now, all of those things are very much Jewish issues. Mm-hmm. Jews in America have always pushed for open borders. They've always pushed for demographic change. They are overwhelmingly overrepresented in the press, in the media, in Hollywood. And they're very, very liberal as a group. And they push for very, very liberal policies. And Donald Trump opposed all of those things in a very open way. And that was very much seen by those people as a full frontal attack on Jews. And since then, we've seen an overwhelming number of Jews attacking Donald Trump and involved in the impeachment process against Donald Trump. But it seems very strange, doesn't it? Here is a man that has opposed these Jewish interests. He's been repeatedly attacked by the Jewish media, by Hollywood. And the impeachment process is overwhelmingly led by Jews. And that's not me saying that. That's something that Jews themselves have said in their own publications. And you can look those things up. There was an excellent YouTube video. It's taken down from YouTube now, so you'll find it on BitChute. And it was done by True News, who are a right-wing Christian group in America. And they went through all the information and documented it very thoroughly. But Trump has also, not only has he opposed these Jewish interests, he's also stabbed in the back or completely abandoned or, for want of a better term, you know, dumped on his own supporters and those closest to him. He's betrayed people, people like Roger Stone, who now, you know, rotting in a jail somewhere, because Trump hasn't supported them. He has repeatedly sacked his closest aides, the people who have been most loyal to him. I mean, you saw the beginning of this, really, with Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon was a man who, you know, really helped Trump. He was one of the masterminds behind the Trump election, and he was very quick to drop this man you know, at the behest of his enemies. Mm-hmm. So this has left Trump either surrounded by people who would be second choice advisors, or surrounded by people who aren't really his best friends, because his best friends and his first picks have all sort of been taken out by him at the behest of his enemies. So now he's left trying to please the very people that he got into power by opposing their interests. So what's he doing? He's basically following this Jewish neocon agenda of starting conflicts in the Middle East, assassinating Israel's enemies. And he's doing all of this because he's got himself in a position where he can't seem to do anything else, because he's got rid of his closest and most able allies. And I think there's a political message in this, that you shouldn't get rid of your allies and friends because your enemies tell you to do so. Because sure, as day follows night and night follows day, our enemies will not get rid of their friends at our behest. And one of Donald Trump's biggest mistakes as an operator is to play so stringently by his enemies' rules, and then naively expected his enemies to also play by those rules, because they won't. And that's landed him in this position where he is now doing anything he can to appease the Zionist world order, to appease Israel, to appease AIPAC, in a desperate attempt to save his own neck. And I think a lot of people could learn from this, and we as nationalists can learn from this, because too often we see nationalists disavowing each other and climbing over each other's bodies in an attempt to please the press and the media. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked for Trump. It won't work for us either. And I think that Trump now needs to, well, I'm sure he is privately assessing his situation, but when Trump does run for a second term, because he undoubtedly will, I think he needs to be far more loyal to the people who work with him during that second campaign than he was to the people who worked with him on the first. And if he gets elected, he needs to keep those loyal lieutenants close, because they will be a shield wall for him. And if he makes the same mistake again, well, it will be an awful second term.
Yeah. So, I agree with your assessment. I was saying all along, and I still think it was correct, that Donald Trump was not trying to do a full frontal assault on Jewish interests across the board. But you pointed out that he took on immigration big time, and that was the number one thing he was elected on. He also was taking on the press big time. And, you know, the press is a big facet of Jewish power. And I think you could also say that at least partly on foreign policy, he was going against, the Jewish preference for, he was talking about withdrawing troops from Afghanistan and Syria, and he was criticizing the Iraq war. Now, there were, in other ways, you know, he was like, wanted to pick and choose his battle. So he went pretty soft on Wall Street. I mean, I think some of his final TV ads, when he was showing all these horrible images, he included Janet Yellen, who was then the head of the Federal Reserve, and Lloyd Blankfein, the head of Goldman Sachs. And so you could say, oh, well, he was... But that was never really very central to him, taking on Wall Street and business interests. And, of course, he was all through the campaign, was... You know, nobody's a bigger friend of Israel than Donald Trump. I led the Israel Day parade down Fifth Avenue, or wherever they have it in New York. And he was always rhetorically hostile to Iran. So, I mean, my assessment was he was trying a kind of divide and conquer of his own. But what you'd see is when he became a president, I think he was trying to play chess, however many dimensional chess he was trying to play chess. But has he even captured a pawn? I mean, he's not a very good chess player. Maybe he was trying to play chess. He hasn't proven to be very good. So, he's in a bad situation. Now, the thing is, Jewish power is not a monolith. There are, I think they are united by wanting to do what's best for the tribe, but they are divided to an extent over what they think is best for the tribe, and some would maximize Israeli geopolitical position, and others, I think, prioritize demographic displacement of whites in America and Europe and whatnot. So I don't think they all have the same plan, but I think they all, do emphasize Jewish interests. So I want to ask you, unless you have more to say about that, I want to ask you about this. We don't have to dwell on it, but the Iranian admission that they shot down this jetliner. Now, Mark Dankoff and I had talked about it last week before they had made the admission, and we didn't know how it came down, and it was certainly possible that they had shot it down themselves mistakenly. We didn't know what had happened, but one thing we did point out is that in the chaos of war, and given the history of the United States having shot down a Iranian jetliner, civilian jetliner in 1988, killing like 280 people. Let's just say this had been an accident, let's just say it had been mechanical failure, because mechanical failures have been happening to Boeing jets, 737s. It would have been a giant coincidence, but what if the giant coincidence had happened and the Iranians would have thought that it had been sabotaged or shot down? That would have been a major escalation, just kind of underscoring the folly of pushing things to the brink when you don't have control over the situation. Now, the fact that the Iranians didn't immediately think that it had been sabotage and didn't respond accordingly, maybe they realized from the beginning that that they had shot it down mistakenly, and that's why they didn't overreact to this. But at the same time, probably felt that they needed to keep it quiet or try to deflect from it, because it would spark a lot of anger in domestically against their government. And remember, this whole incident is coming amidst a couple of months of protests over gasoline prices. So what do you think about this whole phenomenon of them having admitted that they shot down this jetliner by mistake?
Well, I think it obviously was a mistake. I think it's something that's very, very sad, obviously. A lot of people lost their lives completely unnecessarily. But you have to say, at the position they were in, they had just lost General Soleimani. There was probably quite a bit of national panic at that time. Mm-hmm. The people operating those batteries would have been looking potentially for incoming drones or bombers, and obviously mistakes were made. Now, that is a very tragic mistake. It's something that you would have to say would have been a casualty of war, and it would also show just how seriously the Iranian regime and those operating those defense batteries were taking the idea of an American strike at the heart of Iran, or potentially an Israeli strike at the heart of Iran. And obviously, I feel terrible for those who have lost their lives and the families of those who have lost their lives. But I do think these things happen at a time of war. Mm. And at the time, I wasn't really sure whether it was the Iranians or whether there had been some meddling by, say, America or Israel. But I think now the truth has come out, we can look at this in a very sort of somber light and say that it was an unfortunate accident. And it was probably an accident that the Iranians were pushed into making by the current situation. So really, you've got multiple people who could be said at this moment to have blood on their hands because of what happened.
Okay, I have another question. So here in the United States, we know how our own politicians have responded to it, and the Democrats, who, you know, by and large are pretty hostile to Iran and pretty pro-Israel, but, they'll grab on anything to attack Donald Trump. That's what they do. We know that a lot of the Republicans, the senators apparently Donald Trump thought that this was going to cement Republican senatorial support for him in the impeachment trial, and I think that is a reasonable thing for him to have thought. But what I want to know is, in Great Britain, in the United Kingdom, which, you know, followed the United States into the first Gulf War, into the Iraq War. I mean, that was a Anglo-American. I think per capita, there were probably a lot more. Weren't there more troops per capita in the British troops per capita in the Iraq War than even American troops? And so I'm very curious, how did the British political establishment, Tories, Labour, how did they respond to this shooting down? And how did the British Republic, British public respond to this assassination of Soleimani?
Well, firstly, it's very interesting you say that Donald Trump has done this, that he's assassinated this man to shore up support in the Republican Party. Because here are some tweets from Donald Trump. Now, these were made back in, 2012 and 2013, he said, "Remember what I previously said. Obama will someday attack Iran in order to show how tough he is." He then said, "I predict that President Obama will at some point attack Iran in order to save face. Now that Obama's poll numbers are in a tailspin, watch for him to launch a strike in Libya or Iran. He is desperate." And isn't it really funny that those tweets have come back to bite Donald Trump on the backside? Because here you have a man who is desperate and is doing exactly what he predicted another desperate president would do to save face. He's doing that.
I think in a way it's clairvoyant, it shows his thinking. He thought in 2012 that a president who was facing re-election, who had poor poll numbers, and who needed to show how tough he was, would attack Iran. That's what he thought a president would do, and that's what he did as president.
Exactly, and it's something that we can look at now, and we can say to ourselves, oh my, this is exactly the trap he thought Obama was going to walk into. And he walked into it himself for slightly different reasons, obviously.
And I sorry to interrupt, but I think that people like the anti-war people on the Democrats should do some thinking, because they helped lay this trap for him. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's a very interesting point. They have helped, as you say, lay that trap for Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has walked into, so in some ways they have a degree of culpability for what has happened. They have a degree of blood on their hands too, but not so much as Trump, because you've got to remember, Trump decided to do this. It was Trump's decision to strike in that way. He didn't play this straight. He didn't go out there and play things straight down the line and fight the impeachment in a straight and honourable way. He murdered a man that had been the linchpin in the defeat of ISIS just to get a little bit of heat off his own back. That isn't something that any of us can agree with. I hope it's something that none of us would agree with. And as for the British,
I'm just trying to analyse his own psychology and the situation. I'm not trying to justify anything.
No, I do think, though, that Donald Trump, if anyone said that Donald Trump was playing sort of 3D chess at this point, those people would really have to look at themselves quite hard and say, you know, just how hard are they trying to justify Trump's actions?
I mean, because I think you could say he's playing 3D chess, but he's lousy and he's never won a match. He's no... Who's the, he's no Gary Fisher, or whatever the guy's name is.
Well, put it like this, if he's playing 3D chess, he's playing it with himself and he's losing.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, we'll be right back.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, We also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Before, oh, now, before,
okay, we are back, and we've been talking about the Iran stuff. We're not going to talk about it for the whole show, but so here we are. We've had this assassination of General Soleimani. You've had bombing of Iraqi bases, but Iraqi bases where there are apparently Iranian targets and Iranian casualties. So, you know, that's pretty close to war. You've got, in the United States House of Representatives, a War Powers Resolution Act that would restrict Donald Trump's freedom of action. But, you know, whether or not we're... like Don Black on Stormfront every day, he asks, are we at war yet? You know, it's gotten to be very difficult to answer that question. It seems like maybe both sides are pulling back. And when I say both sides, maybe I shouldn't say both sides. It seems like Donald Trump, his, like Tucker Carlson, finally got a hold of his ear, and he's might be backing off some. Iran, by having admitted to shooting down this a jet mistakenly, and now they have to deal with their own demonstrations at home. They probably don't want to go to war. I don't know. It's a very, very precarious situation, and anything could happen. Do you have any ideas on where you think this is going?
Well, it is very, very interesting. And it's very, very interesting for a couple of reasons. Firstly, in terms of the Middle East, Iran is no pushover. I think that's fair to say. In terms of the Middle East, Iran is no pushover. However, in terms of Iran versus America, that's very different. You know, let's not forget that for all the posturing, for all the talk of Russia, for all the talk of China, for all the talk of other powers, whether they be North Korea, whether they be Iran, America is still the world leader when it comes to military power, and probably by quite some way as well. I mean, the American military budget dwarfs, absolutely dwarfs, any other nation's military budget, including China and Russia. We don't have a situation where any nation, especially not Iran, could stand up against the US. However, saying that, in the region, Iran is a superpower. Iran is probably now, other than Israel, the most powerful nation in the Middle East. No Middle Eastern nation could stand against their might. So Iran have got, or the Iranian regime, should I say, have got a tough decision to make. On one hand, they know that war with America would be absolutely suicidal. They know that war with America would lead to their destruction and would lead to the flattening of Afghanistan, of Iran. There's no two ways about that. You know, Iran would be flattened, their regime would fall, and many, many Iranians would lose their lives, and everything they fought to build and preserve would be destroyed. And you've got to remember as well, Donald Trump is bordering on being a tyrant, really, because when you start coming out and saying, we're going to destroy cultural sites, and that is what he said, what does that mean? We're going to blow up ancient monuments, we're going to blow up religious buildings, we're going to blow up, you know, parks and town squares. His choice of words were appalling, and they really show the sort of man he is.
Well, he backed off of that pretty quickly, but it does show that that's his gut reaction.
He said it, and that's like watching a man having an argument with his wife in a public place, and then he snaps quite horrifically and says, when I get home, I'm going to give you, you know, a bit of a backhander. And then everyone looks at him and says, you've just threatened to beat your wife. Oh, I'm not really going to do that. Well, you know, that was just a bit of rhetoric. No, you let something slip that you wish you hadn't. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of man Donald Trump is. Donald Trump's the kind of man who threatens his wife in public, then quickly backtracks and claims it was all just a bit of, you know, blustering rhetoric. Well, to even say something like that illustrates the kind of man that you are. And to start talking about attacking religious or cultural sites is a real low. In fact, that's ISIS tactics, isn't it? That's ISIS tactics.
Yeah, it is.
So I think Donald Trump has shown himself up to be a bit of a monster here. And on top of all of that, you know, going back to what we're saying, you know, Iran would have been concerned about that. So the Iranian regime have got to balance things, because a national hero has been killed. They're a superpower in the region. They have to show some form of retaliation, or else their people and the people mourning Soleimani will be rightfully annoyed. But at the same time, if they go too far, well, their entire regime is going to be crushed, is going to be turned to dust and ash. So they have to be very careful where they go with any of this. And I think that they walked a very fine line. It would have been a very difficult line to walk, but they did it quite well. And I think Trump was probably shocked by how many of his supporters, not core Republicans who never supported him, but people like Ann Coulter, people like Tucker Carlson, people who were, how should we call them, renegade Republicans, you know, were very upset by his actions. And those people carry a lot of weight with people who will go out and support the campaign.
Okay, well, we'll be right back after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Welcome back to the show. So our listeners know, Mark, that every week on Friday you release a new video, kind of like a mini documentary on an important issue. So what's your latest video on?
Well, I think I've done two videos that we actually haven't spoken about. One of them was about the effects of television upon the minds of children. And that was a video that was really close to my heart. Now, sadly, it wasn't a video that's done great numbers. My YouTube channel's pretty much in lockdown, and most of the people who watch it don't get notifications. And the sort of last viral video I did was quite some time ago, which got good numbers. So these videos have had slightly lower numbers than I'd like, especially the one I did on television and screen time damaging children's brains. I don't know if you want to talk about that for a while, but that was a video that was really close to my heart, mm-hmm. because obviously I, you know, welcomed a daughter into the world in July of last year. You know, we just spent our first Christmas with our daughter, and I've been looking in to the effects of television and screen time on children's brains. Now, before we go any further, this is a really, really interesting topic, because a lot of people don't know that children under the age of five undergo the greatest change mentally of that takes place any time during a person's life. And just to put things into perspective, when you're born, your brain is 25% of the size of an adult brain. So at birth, the average baby's brain, about a quarter of the size of an adult brain. Now, in your first year of life, or in your child's first year of life, the brain doubles in size. Now, that's pretty incredible, isn't it? To say a baby's brain in its first year of life doubles from 25% of the adult size to 50% of the adult size, and then by the age of three, it's grown to 80% of the adult size. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then by the age of five, it will be 90% of the adult size. So a baby's brain goes from being 25% of an adult-sized brain at birth to 90% by the age of five, and it doubles in the first year of life. So this is a really crucial time for a child's development. And during this growth, a new study has shown, and this study took place in America, it's shown that children who have had MRI scans, so you can see the development of white matter tracts in the brain, this study has linked reduced or delayed white matter tract development, and that correlates with more screen time. So children who've had more time in front of screens, in front of televisions, they have had reduced white matter development. And what does white matter development govern? Well, it not only governs language and literacy, but it also governs executive function. Now, executive function is important because executive function is something that deals with the ability to delay or forego pleasure. So we as people, those of European descent, advanced as we did because we have this ability to forego pleasure. We have this ability to sow our seeds, to harvest what we've sown, and then delay pleasure through winter to get us through. And it's that cycle of farming, of living through the seasons, of being able to delay pleasure, that basically saw us develop in the way we did and advance to the level that we advanced. We have this ability to not do foolish things for short-term gain. And generally, not being able to delay pleasure, being very impulsive, having to do what makes you feel good instantly, is a characteristic of low IQ people and of different racial groups that haven't developed to the civilizational level that we've developed to. So this is a very, very interesting topic to discuss, because here we have millions of people exposing their children to a huge amount of screen time that was never seen before. I mean, in the UK, we used to have something called Watch with Mother, which was 15 minutes of preschool television a day. And now we have multiple channels screening preschool television 24 hours a day. And the World Health Organization, and this is backed up by the American Academy of Pediatrics, states that children under two should not have any electronic screen time at all, and children between the ages of two and five should not have more than 1 hour a day of screen time. Yet, on average, in America, children aged two and younger are spending a huge 3 hours per day. That's an average in front of a screen. And in the UK, children between 5 and 16 are having, on average, 6.5 hours a day of screen time. So you can see that this is playing a huge role in the decline of our civilization, because this lack of executive function and this reduced white matter development, it's linked to all manner of behavioral problems, ADHD, eating disorders, antisocial behavior. And people keep saying, what is wrong with young people? You know, what's going wrong amongst our people? Well, a large part of this could well be linked to the fact that parents aren't parenting anymore. but they're leaving their children in front of the television or in front of, sometimes in front of multiple screens. I mean, I've seen this. I've gone to houses where you have a group of children all sat in front of the TV, and in their hands, they've got a smaller screen that they're all tapping away on. So they're playing with their phone or their tablets, they're watching the television, and they're sat doing that for hours and hours on end. And this is having a profound effect. And I think there's a major link here between the fall of Western civilization and the declining quality of our people and the exposure that young people have to screens, especially at a time, and I really labored this point earlier, especially at a time when their brains are developing so rapidly. And I think, although not many people watch this video compared to how many people watch a usual video on my channel, I think this is something that is very, very important. And I really urge any parents out there, especially the parents of young children, to really think about limiting that screen time. And just before Christmas, I said this on David's show, we took the decision to remove the television from our living space. So the temptation isn't even there to let Sophia sit in front of it, because I know how hard it is being a parent. And I know how, even at, you know, Sophia's nearly 6 months old, but sometimes she requires constant attention. And there are those moments where you really just want to sit her down just for 15 minutes so you can get something done.
The electronic babysitter.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really important topic. I mean, I don't know what your experiences are with this, Patrick, but it'd be interesting to hear your perspective as well.
Okay. Over the weekend, I, for whatever reason, decided I was going to go to YouTube and watch some Captain Kangaroo shows. So I don't know if you've heard of Captain Kangaroo. He started on TV, this kid's show called Captain Kangaroo, I think in like about 1954, 1955, and continued it for about 30 years. And I watched Captain Kangaroo as a kid, and I was looking at this and I said, oh yeah, Dancing Bear, oh yeah, Mr. Moose, I remember these guys, Grandfather Clock, Mr. Green Jeans, and I think a lot of my listeners out there know what I'm talking about. I remember watching Superman. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Superman. And he was for truth, justice, and the American way. The Hercules cartoon. I remember, and Rocky and Bullwinkle. Well, Rocky and Bullwinkle, I still stand behind. There was a lot of TV, and guess what? I watched a lot of TV growing up. Now, does that mean that there's something wrong with me? Maybe it has something to do with the fact that I became a boomer with a speech impediment. I don't know. Maybe there are other reasons for that. But my generation grew up watching lots of TV, and I'm not saying, see, we turned out okay. Maybe we're damaged by it. Other countries, and I know Britain and Australia, some other countries were slower to have. I mean, even the United States didn't have round-the-clock TV until cable came around. But typically, TV came on maybe 6 in the morning and lasted until about midnight or so. But a lot of other countries, even in the 1980s when I was traveling around, you'd go to some countries and they might have an hour or two of programming in the morning, maybe something at lunch, and then they'd come on for maybe 5 hours in the evening. Most of the time, there wasn't anything on TV. But we've been watching a lot of TV, even in my generation. But now, and this is my experience as a parent, there are screens everywhere. I mean, there have been screens everywhere for a while. So you take away the TV, but then there's the computer in the other room, and they can go, and they have to go to the computer because they've got a homework assignment that says look up such and such on the internet. And then, of course, now the screens are in the pocket. And how on earth are parents going to keep their kids away from screens? I know I tried, and it is so tough because it's like a balloon. You squeeze one end and the other end gets big, and you know there were the Game Boys and everything, and I don't know. Good luck, Mark. That's all I can say. It's not easy.
It is difficult. It is difficult, Patrick. I mean, what I can say about this is when I was a kid, we had television. I'm not going to say I lived in a television-free environment because I didn't. But I didn't have a television in my bedroom till I was much, much older. I didn't have a game console until I was 8. And I'm not saying I had the perfect upbringing, but now we're seeing something that's very, very different. We're seeing a situation where children have their own phone, their own tablet, a television in their room, multiple games consoles, and children are actually setting the agenda of when they watch and how much they watch TV. Now, the key age, as I said earlier, is that children should have no screen time between 0 and 2. And I don't think that's too hard to achieve. I don't think that's something that is really, really difficult.
The older they get, the harder it is.
But the older they get, the less of a damaging effect it has on them. So once you get over the age of 5, your brain is 90% of its adult size. And all of a sudden, it isn't such a huge battle to ensure that your children aren't watching the television. All of a sudden, things are a little bit easier. And I'm not saying that I've got all the answers, and I'm certainly not wanting to preach to anyone. All I'm suggesting is that there is a better way, especially in those first years. Now, the World Health Organization says, you know, up to an hour of supervised screen time for children under 5 is within the recommended guidelines. Now, the crucial time is between 0 and 2, and between 0 and 2 years old, it recommends no screen time at all. And as I said, in that first year of a baby's life, the brain doubles in size. And at that time, you should be doing things with your baby, like reading to the baby, playing with it, speaking to it. And I think that's something that should be achievable. Obviously, things get more difficult as time goes by. But again, you also have to look at what's available on screens now. Now, when I was a child, the most violent things I would watch would probably be the A-Team or He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. But now, it's not just a matter of violence, it's also a matter of sexual content and programs laden with political messages. And let me just give you a sort of a small example of how things have changed. Now, when I was a child, there were films in the 80s. I'd have never seen these films, but it's part of British history. There were films that were called video nasties that were outright banned. There was a list of banned films in the UK because they were so violent, so graphic, or so horrific that the British public weren't allowed to watch these films. Now, all of those, nearly all of those films that were seen as video nasties are now freely available, sometimes with only a 15 rating. So what we've seen is even the Board of Classification in Britain is allowing more and more violent and more degenerate material to be passed as suitable for viewing. And I think the same has sort of taken hold within children's programming. What was acceptable when I was sort of 4, 5, 6, 7 would be probably completely passé now, and stuff that would be completely unacceptable when I was sort of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 would now be, you know, milquetoast, you know, acceptable viewing. And I think we've seen that. I think we've seen a ramping up of what is acceptable. I think we've seen a ramping up of violence, a ramping up of sexual material. But most worryingly, we've seen sexual deviancy and the normalization of the LGBT agenda be pushed within children's programming. And what's more, if you're worried about race mixing or the angle of sort of the mixed race family constantly being pushed, you only have to watch children's TV in the UK to see that the white male is always weak, potentially homosexual or effeminate. The black male is the strong one, and he is always positioned next to the white female, who often is blonde. So you have this, you know, juxtaposition for children of, you know, the white man being weak, effeminate, probably homosexual, the black man being strong, authoritative, tough, masculine, and him being placed next to the feminine white female, and in the child's mind, that forms an association of a natural partnership between black males and white females, with the white man standing meekly to the side, being effeminate and dysfunctional.
Yeah, and that is such a constant subliminal message. It's to the point where, is even subliminal the right word? Because it's getting so over the top. You see it over and over in advertisements and whatnot. I can't remember what it was for. Some sort of Valentine's Day gift. They were showing exactly that type of thing, and you know, different couples. And of course, they had to have the male white homosexual couple who were in a loving embrace. Okay, well, we're up at the break. We'll be right back.
We're gonna sing together, okay?
Tiny bubble in your eyes, make me happy.
You know how to lunch.
Make me feel fine.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Hey, is that a new music app?
Yeah, check it out, Surfer Music Discovery. It links to thousands of online stations, but the twist is you see the song names and artists that are now playing live.
That's different. No guessing. Looks like a waterfall of music.
So many formats. Rock, oldies, country, R&B, jazz, and a whole lot more.
How's that spelled?
Surfer. S-U-R-F-R.
Is it expensive?
It's free. No need to sign up or sign in.
Get the Surfer Music app free from Google Play or the App Store.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Love you till the end of time.
We're the feeling.
We're the feeling. I wanna love you.
I wanna love you
till the end.
The end.
Okay, we are right. We are back, and so Mark, you know, at the last segment of the show, I often ask you about who's your guest going to be on your Patriotic Weekly Review, which I've been fortunate enough to have been a panelist on for, I guess, at least a year and a half. I've got scheduling conflicts, so I'm probably not going to be on for a while. I'll be on this week, though. Who's your guest this week?
Well, the guest is still TBC at the moment. There's a couple of people who have been offered the place, and we'll see who comes through. But I wanted to say that, yeah, it's very sad that you've got this scheduling conflict, because you've been such a huge part of the show. Now, you came on and were part of Patriotic Weekly Review a long, long time ago, back when Bree was hosting it on her channel. Right. Now, that was significantly before episode 50. Now, I think...
How many episodes are we on?
Sorry?
You got to 100 with the old format.
Yeah, there was 100 episodes of This Week on the Alt-Right, and then we moved to the new format of Patriotic Weekly Review, which we're now on episode 136.
Are we on 136?
136 overall. 100 episodes of This Week on the Alt-Right and 36 of Patriotic Weekly Review. Jeez. This is episode 36, so we've done 136 episodes. Now, when you came on to This Week on the Alt-Right... that was a long time ago. Now, that was back on when it was on Bree's channel, as I said. Mm-hmm. And I think Bree stopped doing it at about episode 40. Mm-hmm. So I think you've done about 100 episodes, 90 to 100 episodes yourself, which is a huge achievement. And it's something we're certainly going to miss you. You know, it just seems to be, it's a very sort of sad time to say that, you're actually having to be forced to step down because of this scheduling conflict. And I just want to say that, you know, it's been a huge pleasure working with you for this amount of time. I mean, you know, obviously we only do a show a week and we usually miss a show over Christmas. So you and I have almost done, 2 years worth of shows together of that long 2 hour format. And it is quite a grueling show, you know, having an hour of,
and it's live. You can't record it. Like this show is pre-recorded, although we're going to be playing it in about 40 minutes. We'll start it in about 40 minutes, but, live is tough because, if I have a scheduling conflict, I can take care of this show by pre-recording. And of course you're going to continue to come back on this show. But yeah, the live shows are really tough.
Yeah, they are. Now, obviously, I will continue to, to do this show here with you. And obviously, with this being pre-recorded, it makes it easier. We can work around, your new plan, which is fantastic. And I think that this is, we'll give you a good send-off this week. And it's been a pleasure working with you. You always bring a certain degree of gravitas to the show, and you're always very, very clear on issues such as the Middle East, this Iran conflict. You were excellent on last week, and I think you'll be sorely missed. I certainly won't be rushing to replace you. I haven't got a replacement lined up, and I hope in the future, if your scheduling conflict comes to an end, that you will come back and join us again.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, well, thank you for having joined the show again this week. We'll be looking forward to hearing from you again next week. And in the meantime, I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.